Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
He said Islam Makhachuk. I love that.
Dude, this isn't going to come out till Sunday, but we got Paulo Costa and Sean Strickland.
Yep.
I'm excited about that one. And then obviously Dustin versus Islam.
Yep.
Who else is on the card? Do you know?
We've got, Kevin Holland is fighting the Russian.
Is he really?
Yeah, he's a Russian striker, Michael Olenchenchek or something like that. He's got a 7-inch reach on him. I think he knocks him out.
He's a good wiler.
Yeah.
He wiles out.
Who, Kev?
Or the other guy?
The other guy's just a strong, I would say, well-rounded Russian. I just think that Kev's got too much length for him, and he's got good enough takedown defense and submission defense to be able to keep it standing, and that's where he thrives, brother.
He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu, too, isn't he?
Kev, yes.
He is?
Yeah. I mean, he knocked out Jacare Souza on the ground while they were grappling. So, Jacare Souza is an ADCC grappling champion.
We were drilling ground and pound on Thursday. It's a fun little deal to just kind of see what the look is, because obviously, you know, with our training, with our team, you can't really ground and pound on somebody.
Yeah, well, like, just for the safety of everyone, right. You don't want to do too much ground and pound.
So Thursday we kind of slowed it down, and we were just kind of like, okay, this is what mount would look like, bang,
right,
bang. And the guy just, like, my partner and I did this too, like, you just hang out on your back and let your partner get mount and just work.
Yeah.
And not try to get up. And then we started doing get ups, and it would be like, you know, hold him down 60% and then hold him down full go, like try to keep him down the whole time, and the other guy needs to get up.
Yeah. I was watching Tim coach ground and pound one time at one of their advanced private classes or whatever. I'd stop by the gym to grab a copy or whatever.
Yeah.
And he said half guard is probably the best position MMA wise to do ground and pound because you're almost like safe there from damage. Being the top aggressor ground and pound guy, you're safe from pretty much everything except a Kimura. So as long as you don't get Kimura'd, I don't know. I feel like a lot of MMA guys do a lot of damage in half guard. Like a lot of damage.
Dude, when we were drilling it on Thursday, I fucking hated being on the bottom.
On half guard.
On half guard.
Yeah.
I felt like I couldn't get up because if I tried to do anything to get up, you get hit.
Yep.
And obviously,
because you got a post and you got a defense, so your face is just open to taking licks on the way up. Yeah, 100p.
So it was like, damn. And then honestly, like holding it, like if I'm on top and he's got me in his half guard, I just found myself kind of like wanting to pass.
Yeah.
And that's probably not the right thing to do.
I feel like that's the mental battle for the MMA art, is you either decide to try and pass or you lock down the half guard, keep the guy pounded, and just, yeah. Since we're on the topic of the UFC shit, a lot of the Dagestanis and a lot of the Russians are so good at getting that half guard and just causing so much damage from the half guard. And then guess what? You just said you want to pass from half guard. Do enough damage and you'll find an opening to pass. You know what I mean? So it's like they go position over submission, which in that case it would be position over damage. But if you can secure a position, the damage will come, just like the submission will come.
I found myself trying to find subs a lot when we were doing like the full go around.
Yeah.
And it's like my jiu-jitsu is just not far along enough yet to get like subs when I want to get them. So like I found myself in a like trying to get an arm bar, and my training partner, his hands were just locked up.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out how to break them.
How do you break them? Yeah, I mean, I guess from that position, if it's like a no-gi or an MMA setting, like
There's no risk of damage. My
jiu-jitsu is fucking terrible too. I have yet to switch the mentality in my jiu-jitsu yet because I've got so much more room to grow that like I have yet to pull the trigger on just shoot for the submission because I'm so worried about getting to a better position. Like especially mm-hmm. when I'm in a bad position, side control or somebody's got my back or somebody's in the mount. I'm sure there's opportunities to get submissions from those bad positions, but I'm not even worried about them because
I'm just worried about trying
to survive and get to a better position. And even adding to that, when I'm in those good positions, I still don't even fucking switch my brain to a submission because I'm just trying to get better position or keep my position.
Yeah.
So it's like, fuck, I don't even think about submissions when I'm fucking doing that shit. I just try to get... Like, you watched my match that I won and when I did my tournament. I didn't try a submission until I was in the best physical position to get a submission, which was full mount. Like, you just saw me trying to just improve my position the entire time.
Dude, you know Big Jaime got me with a mother's milk week before last.
Bro,
dude.
He gets me with all those cheeky submissions, bro.
And I was like, bro.
Wrist locks, mother milk. From side control, he likes the Americanas and Kimuras. He's a little fucking fuck. I love him, though.
I'll rehash it with him when we're done, because he'll give me, like, little pointers and stuff for a bigger guy. And he did that mother's milk on me, dude. And I was like, bro, like, how do I get out of that? And he was like, just turn your face to the side. And I was like, oh, that's a lot more obvious than I felt it was in the moment.
Essentially, you want to either throw your face to a side or try to like fetal position, like crunch as far as you can, push the hips back to create that space, and then try to get your knees back under you. Dude. If you're in the mount, obviously, or if you're mounted, I should say, obviously, but.
I felt like my damn like jaw was like.
Yeah, it's not. Dude, I did it to Xavier.
I've seen the video a thousand times.
Yeah, that clip is funny.
This is my boy Mikey Music. We're gym buddies. He came on down to Villa Rita Drive to live here with me about a year ago.
Gang, gang.
And we've been killing ever since. We've been humming ever since. So this is In the Jar, episode 21. My boy Mikey joined us. We're going to get into some email topics here, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, some philosophy, talk a little shit. Obviously, we got UFC 302 as of the day of this shoot coming up tonight. So when you're seeing it on Sunday, it will have happened yesterday. So if we have some bad takes, forgive us. I definitely will. But we're going to cover Farnham Street brain food to start the show like we always do. So let's get it popping. Farnham Street. In an opinion contrary to your own, if an opinion contrary to your own makes you angry, that is a sign that you are subconsciously aware of having no good reason for thinking as you do. If someone maintains that 2 and 2 are 5, or that Iceland is on the equator, you feel pity rather than anger, unless you know so little of arithmetic or geography that his opinion shakes your own contrary conviction. The most savage controversies are those about matters as to which there's no good evidence either way. I think I stay off of politics for the most part of this show, but that's the first thing that comes to mind when I think about that.
Yeah, I was going to say,
when you're talking about something that you feel is the right thing and somebody else gets mad, that's a pretty good indicator that they're at least a little threatened by where you're coming from. You know what I'm saying? It shows a part of themselves that they're maybe not comfortable with, or an idea that they're maybe not comfortable with. And I don't want to get too crazy on the show, but I can think of a lot of instances going on in our present day where that's kind of a big thing these days. Pronouns, I'll go there. You know, it's like, I don't know. I think the truth has become pretty obvious these days, don't you?
Yeah, I was going to say on the flip side of that, just when you're having, just I was going to dumb that whole entire quote down for us layman terms. I'm definitely on that. It basically is what it's saying is like when you're having a conversation with somebody and then me and Clark were saying, hey, 1 + 1 = 2. We're both on the same page about that. Somebody comes in and goes, no, 1 + 1 = 3. We know what the truth is, but that person who believes that 1 + 1 = 3 is so hell-bent on 1 + 1 = 3 that it makes you, on the flip side, think that you're actually crazy.
Yep.
And so on the flip side of that context of that verbiage there, I like it. I like it a lot. It hones in on the idea of living in truth. And truth doesn't have an opinion, really. It is what it is. And so it's explaining the mentality behind seeking the truth and the inner feelings that could breed when having to deal with those kind of conflicts, for sure.
I love that. Okay. Insights. Asking for help is a superpower anyone can have, but only some people use. It is brave to ask for help. Asking for help is the first step toward finding a mentor. Mentors can help us change our lives if we let them. And that's from Alexi Pappas. I think we got some pretty good mentors, don't you?
Shit, we are lucky, my friend. Blessed, for sure. I really like that. And I really like the fact that it says that asking for help is a superpower. Because a lot of us, especially in today's society, especially still being men, and I hate to make this a sex thing, but we like to have pride a lot more than normal women are walking around, so we don't like to ask for help. But I think if you can correlate an environment where it's okay to ask for help, and like you're all kind of on the same page of getting together and building and benefiting from each other, it's great to ask for help. You've asked me for help, I've asked you for help, and we don't kind of hold that over each other's heads. We kind of just build each other up, and I think it is a superpower, because it takes a village. Whatever you're trying to do, it takes a village, for sure.
You know Terrence McKenna?
I feel like I've heard that name. Yeah.
He's like one of the most gangster psychedelic philosophers to ever live.
Okay.
And he was kind of talking about how male ego is the root of all or most of bad things in our society.
I 100% agree. Yeah.
Because I think the male ego can be a beautiful thing if you harness it the right way. But we're humans. We're not perfect. We're not going to always harness our superpowers the way that the universe would like us to.
Right.
And so with that comes a downside.
Yep.
It's just like investing, right? Bitcoin could go, this is not advice, but Bitcoin could go through the fucking roof.
Hey, speaking of, it just hit 70,000 the other day, baby.
It was popping off a couple days ago, but you know, that can go down just as fast. It
can go down to 32 overnight.
I think markets in that capacity are a really good mirror to things like that. But yeah, we got some pretty good mentors.
I
feel blessed about that. Okay, trust your obsessions. This is one I learned more or less accidentally. People sometimes ask whether the research or the idea for the story comes first for me. And I tell them normally the first thing. You do that away from the mic a little bit.
Oh, my bad.
It's hot.
Yeah.
Mikey's got his little, he's got the geek bar over there.
Yeah. Terrible habit, ladies and gentlemen. Well, terrible habit.
Terrence McKenna also said this. He said, a man must have one vice, one thing to kind of be on the wild side.
Gotcha.
a lot of great, you know, masterful people at their craft, they've got one thing.
Yeah, I hear you.
This is not an ad.
Zinnichino.
We are not big enough to run
Zinnichino,
ads.
Zinnichino, baby.
And I don't think Zin would want me to fucking show this.
Hey, Zin, sponsor my boy, okay? Dude, jeez.
Well, you know what happened with...
In the jaw. It's basically a jaw.
The Zin pouch is in the jar. The jar is my suck hole. All right. Tucker Carlson. You remember when he went on someone's podcast and was like, he basically just ran a fucking Zen post roll, dude. I mean, he was fucking, he was talking about how God comes down and massages your central nervous system. Zen is not a sin, all this stuff. Apparently that shot Zen's sales through the roof. This was from a Wall Street Journal video that I watched about how big Zens have gotten in America.
I think it's correlated with the Nelk Boys. I think that's the podcast you were talking about.
It was Full Send, yeah.
Yeah, and they did a the world's largest Zen container.
Yeah, I remember
and they
that.
Shipped it on a helicopter to give to Tucker. It was pretty lit.
Yeah, so this is the interesting side of the story. So apparently Zen reached out to Tucker and said, hey, stop. We don't want this press. And the reason they've had to do that is because they were worried about underage people using Zen.
I can definitely see that. I was more thinking they could be worried about just product quality as general. Maybe. If he, let's say generally speaking, theoretically speaking, they're selling 1,000 cans a day, and then they can handle that workload, or let's say they can handle that demand. And then Tucker says, everybody go buy Zyn. Obviously, he didn't say that, but then they go to 5,000 cans a day. Maybe they're worried about not being able to pump up the same amount of product that is good or quality. That would be my first concern. But yeah, underage, I mean,
there's a big shortage going on right now. I had to freaking skin an old homeless lady for this Spearmint 6 right here today.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I just saw a video of a guy who's a big Zinner as well. He's a grappler, Nicky Ryan, and he goes, starting to get a little short in the all the liquor stores and tobacco shops around town.
Yep.
He's going to enter a grappling tournament for $1 million. He said if he wins the million, he's going to bulk order a bunch of Zins so he doesn't run out.
Dude, I couldn't find a spear. I spent 9 days in Nashville, Tennessee last week, and week before last, 9 days. And I couldn't find a single Spearmint 6 the whole time I was there at any gas station.
That's crazy. Are they just running out of that specific flavor and dosage, or is it all across the board?
It's very popular, the Spearmint 6s.
Okay.
And it's my
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Favorite, of course, and I had to get these nasty menthols anyway. Okay, so resume the quote here. I tell him normally the first thing that turns up is the obsession, and so this I'll go back. Trust your obsessions. This is one I learned more or less accidentally. People sometimes ask whether the research or the idea for the story comes first for me, and I tell them normally the first thing that turns up is the obsession. For example, all of a sudden, I notice that I'm reading nothing but English 17th century metaphysical verse. Wow. And I know it'll show up somewhere. Whether I'll name a character after one of those poets, or use that time period, or use the poetry. I have no idea. But I know one day it'll be there waiting for me. You don't always use your obsessions. Sometimes you stick them onto the compost heap in the back of your head, where they rot down and attach to other things and get half forgotten, and will one day turn into something completely usable. Go where your obsessions take you. Your obsessions may not always take you to commercial places or apparently commercial places, but trust them. Damn. That's fire, I think.
I like that a lot.
It might be hard to follow because I'm reading it and you're just listening.
No, but I tried to compartmentalize each kind of chunk that you go through. I love it. I mean, I feel like, to make it personal, I'm obsessed with like just the truth. I feel like the more we grow up, the more we see bullshit, and like I'm obsessed with the truth, which is why I think, I mean, you've seen me in a lot of different mentalities, just being roommates and friends and everything like that. You can tell when it comes to like that kind of stuff, I get fired up about it. Yeah. Like I get really worked up about it, fired up about it, because I think just the way I'm engineered, like I operate best with genuine just truth and like everything on the table. This is who I am. This is what I'm going to do. And a lot of people that kind of try to shy away from that, I tend to have problems with. So that I can understand, just because you read it, that was the first thing I thought about, is like, I'm obsessed with just the truth. Like, let's get to the bottom of things. Let's get this situation as organic as possible to be able to build it up from a good foundation. I feel like that's what my current obsession, other than working and making money, for sure.
Dude, I love doing this shit. Like,
yeah, you've been in here cooking.
It's like, you know, some people, and I've talked about this before, it's like some people might wonder, like, oh, you know, why are you doing this? It's because I like it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
100p.
Like, there ain't no other thing. And it might not ever turn into something, but even if it doesn't, I won't regret doing this.
No, 100%. And
it's, you know, I mean, even.
Are you obsessed with it, though?
I think so, man.
Yeah.
I'm always like.
Yeah.
Thinking cooking. About, I'm thinking about how I can make clips better. I'm thinking, like, literally, as you were just talking, I had an idea in my head. So it's just like, I like creating. Dude, yeah. I was hanging with one of my buddies in Nashville, Travis Denning, and he's a singer. He just dropped his debut album, and it's a banger. I showed you some of them, but we were in the studio. And he was just kind of like showing me, you know, how to make different types of sounds on a record. And I was just like, my thoughts are racing, like in the best way. I'm like, dude, this is fire. Like, I just like making stuff. I like watching people make stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And it's got like your own unique touch on it too, because you could tell, like, when people are obsessed with creative, they have their own flair on it. And like, we're around people a lot that are doing a lot of creative things and content things.
Martial arts is creative, if you think about it.
100%. And the thing about martial arts, just like we're talking about, everybody has their own little flavor to it. You know what I mean? You do things a little bit different than I do things, that JoJo does a little bit things than David does. Obviously, at the very, very top, Shug has done things different than anybody we've seen. So it's like, it's really cool to see your pod, how you're trying to drive it, opposed to Schmidt or like Shug and Tim or like anybody like that, to where it's dope. It's like, this is your vibe. Like, I love watching your clips because I know it's literally Clark. Like, that's your experience. That's your flavor to it. The whole fucking, you're making fun of your strength and conditioning coach. You've got all these clips. Yeah. Yeah, you've got all these clips and everything. It's just your spunk to it. And I feel like genuinely a lot of people will be able to vibe off that and relate to that. And like, that all comes from your obsession and your drive to do this. So it's really dope to see. Thanks, and again, brother. I want to do this shit eventually. We've talked about it a ton off of camera, how we should fucking both be doing this shit. I just fucking, whatever. For whatever reason, it's not time yet. So.
Everybody's on their own deal, man.
Yeah.
You know, that's just what it is.
But okay. That's for sure. I got shit to say, and I'm obsessed with talking. So I definitely should be doing this in some facet for sure.
I agree. All right. Debt defines your future. And when your future is defined, hope begins to die. You have committed your life to making money to pay for your past. Damn.
This is kind of opposite to what we were talking about
the
other day.
That's a hard hitter. Yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, debt is...
It's a slippery slope if you're not smart with it, right?
Yes. Something's capacity to do good is met with the same capacity to do bad. And, I mean, debt is what makes all of the... most successful, for the most part, right? Everybody's case by case basis, but most of the business moguls you see have used debt,
millions of dollars to some extent. Debt.
But I can see how. I think this is probably more slated towards this quote, and this is from Kent Nerburn, and it's from Simple Truths: Clear and Gentle Guidance on the Big Issues in Life. I think he's talking about consumer debt.
Credit like, cards.
Yeah, it's like, dude, I
subscription plans.
I knew a chick one time, man, and she came back from Best Buy and she was like, oh dude, I got all this for like $20. And I was like, cool. What'd you give up for it? And she was like, oh, I just opened this Best Buy credit card and like I have to spend a certain amount. Whatever, man. It's like, the consumer culture can really, like, you see it on the TV programs when you're watching the NFL. It's like bright colors, mm-hmm. catchy lines, jingles, all this stuff, trying to get people to grab, like, feel FOMO, fear of missing out, to like get into whatever the cool thing is, whatever the cool thing to buy is. And it's like, I think that's what this quote is talking about.
I have a perfect example for what I think you're trying to explain. So I was a assistant sales manager for a local gym, your LA Fitness, your EOS, whatever is in your current area, right? Yeah. And we had a sale that we had proclaimed that was going on for a limited time only. It was sign up for $1 today. All you have to do is pay it for a dollar, and your first month of registration won't go through until you come actually physically into the gym. So you pay a dollar today, and your first $30 for the first month doesn't start until you come in. What we briskly told people is that there was an annual fee that was charged 30 days after that, right? So we tell them on day one, you're paying a dollar, but really by day 90, they've paid $100 and something for 1 month's use of the gym because an annual fee was built in. So I understand what you're saying when, you know, the consumer debt, because you have to be careful with that, because yeah, I could come up to you as a salesman and say, sign up for a dollar, it's $29.99 a month. And now you're already in $180 30 days in, and you're like, wait, I thought it was a dollar.
Yeah, and you got some talented folks out there, some silver-tongued devils that can really thread the needle a little bit.
100p.
And you can use that power for good. You can also use that power for the opposite.
100p.
And I think greed is a nasty, nasty human trait that makes the latter one of the more common outcomes, if you pick up what I'm laying down.
100%. Well, and it kind of explains the gray area of that quote, right? Like we were talking about how debt could be good and bad. Just like, you know, having the gift of the gab could be good and bad. You know what I mean? You could either lead people astray or lead people towards whatever the good situation of that may be.
Double-edged sword.
100p.
I've been preaching Isaac Newton's law, which is ironic because I've been hearing a lot of stuff that is shitting on a lot of those physicists. But Isaac Newton said, what goes up must come down. Okay. Tiny thoughts. Reputation is a form of wealth. There you have it.
Your network is your net worth, baby.
Well, it's just like, I think your reputation is based on how you treat people when there's not necessarily like
a benefit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That. So I read something somewhere. It said competence is your ability to deliver when there's something to be gained. And then character is when... Is your ability to deliver or help someone when there's nothing to gain.
Right.
So I think reputation is based more on your character than your competence.
I agree that your character is based off of what you do behind closed doors when nobody's looking, and your competence
you have
is
nothing to gain.
Right. And your competence is what you do when people are asking you to do something.
Yep.
So
or you're doing it for yourself.
Right. So yeah. Like your cold plunge daily is a character thing. It's not a competence thing. Nobody's watching you and making sure you do your cold plunge, or really even asking you to do the cold plunge or expecting you to do the cold plunge.
Yeah.
Now, maybe coming into this podcast, and for your viewers, it might be a competence thing because they're expecting you to come in here and give them a show to watch every week or whatever.
100%.
But on the flip side of that, the competence to that, on the character side of that, you show up here every single week and you give them something to give them. Every single week, regardless of how you're feeling, regardless of the headlines this week, regardless of the content you've created or not or thought of that week, like you show up every damn day and give them what they want. So that's good character.
Appreciate that, brother.
Yeah, I got you.
The best returns come from your biggest opportunities, not your biggest problems. I'll read that again. The best returns come from your biggest opportunities, not your biggest problems. Mm. I'm having a hard time grasping that one.
I think I understand what it's saying. I technically disagree with that.
Really?
I think, say that one more time.
The best returns come from your biggest opportunities, not your biggest problems.
So I think your biggest opportunities and your biggest problems can be the same thing, which produce a whatever it was saying in the beginning, more benefit. So I actually think, generally speaking, I disagree with that because I think the biggest rewards / growth / whatever you want to call it, progress, come from your biggest problems.
Yeah.
And I'll use an example. For the longest time, I had a spending problem. I was very lackluster on how I spent my money.
There's a lot more people struggling with that than you think.
Right. And so you tend to spread yourself thin when you don't have it. With those problems become more responsibility and more opportunity to grow and become better financially. So I think in that, I do think a lot of problems present growth. That doesn't mean that opportunities don't present growth as well. I just think that those things can go hand in hand as well.
Yeah,
like, I think it's a general idea.
That's an interesting one. This is a really good newsletter that I live read every week on the show. and it's like some good philosophy stuff, some good productivity stuff. So this is the last little snippet from here, and then we'll take a look at what's going on in the sports business. There are different types of hard work. Number one, outthinking. That means a better strategy or a shortcut. Number two, pure effort. That means working longer and intensity. Number three, opportunistic, positioning yourself to take advantage of change. Number four, consistency, doing average things for longer. Number five, and the last one, focus, saying no to distractions. Each of these requires a different type of hard work. That is good fucking juice, bro.
I really like number three. I feel like I attach myself to number three a lot.
Opportunistic.
I feel like I'm, because of the way I've crafted myself over the years, I feel like I'm extremely opportunistic.
I like number four, consistency.
That too.
Because that's a choice.
Yes. Yes, I agree.
If you just decide, if you make this pact within yourself, I mean, I did it with this. You've done it with jujitsu, like, or anything, right? It could be a morning routine. Like, you know, it's giving you an edge. Okay, I'm going to win by just doing it more than everybody else, doing it on a regular basis. I love that,
bro. Yeah.
Outthinking, not so much. I don't like thinking.
I feel like that. I mean, I wish I was more consistent. I feel like as a general human being, you're more consistent than I am. So I feel like you can attach to that more than I can. I feel like just how I treat people and how I am, I'm very much more opportunistic. Dude, I'm ready. The second things change, bro, I am your guy. Let's go.
That's one I'm trying to hone. Because, you know, a lot of times in my life, I think I'm getting better and better about being opportunistic. But, you know, it's like growing up, it's like a little CTE brain. And you're just like, oh, yeah, this guy, you know, it's like kind of being a dumbass. I'm talking about myself.
Can I be honest with you at where I think you can be better opportunistically?
Roast me.
You're too much of a numbers guy. Now, I don't get me wrong. You being a number.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Numbers guy is so good for your life and what you're doing, and it's very, very, very beneficial for you. I think you being that way though decreases your willingness to take the risk that comes with being an opportunist. So me, I could just say, fuck it. I know eventually I'm going to be good, whether it's numbers, places, things, whatever. I'm going to take care of me. Don't worry about it. So I could just say, fuck it in my head and jump at that opportunity.
I'm trying to improve and being more like that.
I think it's just you like, not that this is a bad thing. This is just how people are.
They make Fords.
Yep. You make sure that everything makes sense before you make that jump, as opposed to where I'm like, shit's going to work
out.
Shit's going to work out how it's going to work out. Let's just fucking take a leap. Like, fuck it.
Okay. And then there's pure effort. I don't really love that one because I've been there before where I'm just like, I'm going to tough it out. Fuck it. Fuck everyone. And just, you know, we're going to tough it out. And a lot of times, pure effort, if you're just operating with pure effort, and I think a lot of men in our society kind of err towards that these days. I think folks like Tate, folks like Andy Elliott, people like that, they kind of preach that just pure fucking juice, baby.
One more rep. I think that's good.
But I think you have to be opportunistic in when you choose to expend that pure
effort. I was going to say that. I was going to let you finish and expand upon that. That effort isn't the only thing that works. It has to be a mixture of something else with your unrelentless effort. You can't just be foot on the gas, full force, going the wrong direction. Because that's not a good idea, right? Like, when we hear about this effort thing that we're talking about, I think of Dylan from the gym. That guy gives 100% effort.
Cut that, Luke. I don't want to get killed.
Listen, Dildo, I love you, buddy. It's Mikey Music. I'm willing to put my stamp on it.
Luke, please cut that. cut that.
That guy is full effort, though.
Yeah, dude, he's a big dog,
man. Yeah, big genetic full effort dog.
And then there's focus. So saying no to distractions. That, I think, is the hardest one out of the five, is honing
100%.
Your focus. Yeah. Especially in the time we live in. I'm so prone to it, dude. Especially if I have to post clips, I'll find myself scrolling. I put a little time limit on my phone. I fucking disregard that shit half the time. You know, remind me in 15 minutes. It's just like, I've been meditating every day for like 3.5 years now, and I still find myself thinking, oh, my focus could improve. It's insane. It's so hard, but it's a different kind of hard. You know what I mean?
I also think it's a lot harder nowadays because we have so much more distraction.
Yeah, we got, you know, it's like
compared to our parents' generation.
You scroll through reels, you got asses shaking in your face, but you got damn. You got to do your damn taxes, and you're sitting here thinking, "Well, the ass looks pretty decent. I'm gonna get away on the tax." Mikey's skirting on out of here. I said something to make you mad, huh?
No, I just gotta take a leak, and I don't want to make noise.
Oh, okay, Luke. I'll just have Luke. You can come back in.
No, you're good. I'm gonna get out of here.
Oh, you gotta skedaddle.
Yeah, I'm gonna skedaddle.
I had him storm off the show, ladies and gentlemen.
Make sure you follow the boy.
Oh, please. Shameless, horrible plug.
Listen, it's in the jar.
Yeah.
With Clark Dupree.
Yeah, dude. Duh.
Sub and like.
Dude.
Don't forget to comment.
Oh, that's horrible. That hurts. Okay.
Love you, buddy.
Love you, dog. All right. We're going to take a look at Robin Hood Snacks. So Robin Hood sends out a little newsletter I think I get one every day. They got people writing for them. And this is a crypto edition. So I'm interested to see what we're cooking with here. Crypto watchdogs ramp up enforcement as lawmakers consider an alternate path. SEC Chair Gary Gensler had vowed to crack down on crypto's Wild West ways, and his agency has put its flat money where his mouth is. SEC enforcement actions against crypto firms shot up 53% last year to nearly double 2021 levels. Crypto leaders accuse regulators of rulemaking by enforcement, and they say they want clarity. It may be coming. Last week, the U.S. House passed an industry-backed bill despite opposition from Gensler. And earlier this month, the Senate voted to reject the SEC's controversial crypto custody guidance. Interesting. So here are the players. The commission's work to try to rein in crypto. It sent Wells notices to Consensus, Uniswap, and Robinhood. And this is a disclosure Robinhood owns Sherwood Media, which I imagine is who's writing this. And it sued industry titans Ripple and Coinbase. But crypto's pushed back. Consensus sued the SEC over its Ethereum regulations last month. And in February, LaHex sued too, accusing the regulator of overreach. Plus, crypto's PACs have raised $100 million plus ahead of this year's U.S. elections. FYI, Coinbase and Ripple contributed about half of that. The positions. Lately, the GOP has been viewed as more of a crypto industry ally than the Dems, but last week's bipartisan House bill passed with support from 71 Democrats, plus 11 Senate Dems recently defied President Biden to help pass the measure that would roll back some SEC crypto guidance. So, I think this is a really cool time in U.S. financial history because this isn't a partisan issue. I don't think the issue of crypto. And I think we're just scratching the surface on what kind of capabilities these cryptocurrencies are going to be able to offer to the people. The big hurdle is going to be the lobbying power in Washington by the banks, i.e. the middlemen who would be cut out if decentralized finance were to become king in the new world. So I don't know. It's pretty cool how it's split and how, you know, there's a lot of Democratic support. I just don't think anyone has a single idea of what kind of capability crypto can bring to the table. Okay. The business of Bitcoin is booming and then Wall Street wants in. By the way, this is not financial advice. If you want financial advice, give me a call, 480-269-3633. Shameless plug. The markets. Bitcoin's year has been one to write home about. The OG crypto kicked off 2024 with a rally following the SEC's begrudging approval of 11 spot Bitcoin exchange traded funds. So for those watching that don't know what an exchange traded fund is, you think about the risk profile of each asset in the market that you could possibly buy. I'm talking about different kinds of securities. So the riskiest asset you can buy, depending on the company, is going to be an individual stock. Think, I shouldn't mention individual companies on here, but one individual stock, you guys can think of a couple of companies that you know, that's the riskiest place you can put your money, right? And what goes up must come down, right? So it normally works out, but a lot of times it can also not. The next asset that you can invest your money into is an exchange traded fund. So you think about, see if I have a pen. There's your individual stock. There's your individual stock right there for my video viewers. Okay, it's one dot. This is an ETF. So you see all of the dots in this one pooled circle. So basically what the SEC approved with Bitcoin was the ability for your fund managers. There are people in the world that make money off of creating these ETFs. And so the SEC approved 11 different funds to come out where the assets in this big bubble are Bitcoin and crypto-related assets. I don't know much more about the ETFs than that, but that is an ETF. And then for all of those wondering, a mutual fund is also one of these types of assets. So the reason mutual funds are going, I don't want to say going away. They're less popular these days because, and the business is still booming, don't get me wrong. But the mutual funds are investment products like ETFs. There's a lot of different positions pooled into one fund, but they are not publicly traded. So what does that mean? That means that you can't just buy it right away and then sell it the next minute. You can't trade them because an ETF and a stock, when you buy or sell one of those, that is considered a secondary transaction. A secondary transaction means that you're not buying the stock or the ETF from who, you're not buying it from the company, you're not buying it from the fund manager, you're buying it from another market participant that is selling to you. And there's so many buyers and sellers when the market is open that if I decide to buy this ETF at 3:01 p.m. on a Tuesday and I decide to sell it at 3:03 p.m. on a Tuesday, that transaction will most likely get filled at those times. But with a mutual fund, you are buying the investment product directly from the folks that are making the mutual fund. So that means it's a bit less liquid. It's not illiquid, but you might have to wait a business day. You might have to wait till the end of a business day. You might have to wait till the end of the next business day. Or in some cases, there are mutual funds that you can't liquidate for a longer set period of time, if I'm not mistaken. And there's normally higher fees. ETFs were also a big innovation in markets because of the fact that they're able to get the fees lower. Because on mutual funds, a lot of times there's sales charges. The company making them gets revenue off of a sales charge every time a transaction is rendered with their fund. So yeah, that is the long story short on that. Short story long. What else? Crypto gaming, I'm not interested in that. Blockchain tech. Let's see. Crypto VC funding, venture capitalist funding, not VR. Okay. Crypto VC funding jumped for the second straight quarter last month, hitting $2.4 billion. On the industry's mind, AI. The hope is that, let's see. There's a International Business Machines. I don't own that company and I don't put my clients in it, so we can talk about it. IBM consulted with blockchain startup Casper Labs to design a blockchain-backed tool designed to audit the data used to train AI systems. The hope is that the tech could help identify AI flaws like bias results and hallucinations. This week at the crypto conference Consensus, media execs said the blockchain could help identify AI deepfakes and protect creators. That's cool. So I guess it's a cybersecurity play, and it's also a let's make sure the AI doesn't go off the rails play. Okay. Off the chain, a survey of Fortune 500 execs familiar with blockchain tech last year found that over 80% said they either already had or were planning crypto or blockchain initiatives. Nestle and Walmart have tested using the blockchain to track how some of their food products travel from farm to table. And Microsoft's partnered with crypto co Aptos Labs for AI and Web3 projects. Interesting. So there's this stuff. I mean, I guess it's not behind the scenes, but the average human may not know how much venture capital interest it seems the cryptocurrency space is getting. All right, let's move on to some clips and some sports news. Why don't we? So here's the first deal of the day. Gable Stevenson, an Olympic gold medalist and one of the most dominant college wrestlers in NCAA history, is jumping to the NFL to sign with the Buffalo Bills. His agent, Carter Chow, told Adam Schefter. So I saw this, I was like, what the hell? And then I scrolled to the videos I'm about to show y'all, and it kind of makes sense.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Oh. They want to see his celebration backflip. Ah, the energy of youth. Just one, two big bouts and enough left in the tank to fly on.
Can you imagine shooting a double on that guy and him just stuffing it? destroy your shoulders, dude. I wonder what position he'll play. It doesn't show his physical attributes. He looks at least 240 pounds, bro. And you're seeing more and more, man. I think the Chiefs signed a rugby guy. You're seeing more and more of these NFL teams kind of taking chances on just freak athletes. And I'm sure those clips of that boy backflipping, brother, were what sent scouts over the edge. It's like, give this guy a chance. Good for him. I'll be really fired up if he makes the team. It could be a linebacker, could be a... Sometimes you got guys in football. I remember one guy specifically that I was a high school teammate of mine. He came in. He looked a lot like Mr. Gable Stevenson. Maybe it's not Stevenson. Stevenson. He looked a lot like that guy, and he started out with the linebackers, and he did just fine. But they said, brother, you're stout enough and strong enough to be nose tackle. And he was one of the great nose tackles in the history of our high school, brother. He was a dog. Strong as hell. Dog mentality. Low to the ground. Stick his hands out. Just bang. Bang. Get off. Get off. I bet D-line, maybe linebacker. Interior D-line. I mean, he's a brick shit house. Okay, next deal. Former QB Malik Cunningham is now listed as a wide receiver on the Ravens roster. I think he played at Louisville. And he was a really explosive player for the University of Louisville. Was he, let's see, college. Yeah, Louisville. He was a quarterback at Louisville. So, I love when a guy just says, hey, what do you need me to do on a football team? I love when a guy says, what do you need me to do? I'll do it. You know, we talked about it on the show a couple weeks ago. Guys that say, no, I'm a quarterback. I think that's going away because fellas are realizing how scarce opportunities really are at the highest level. And if you got a chance to go get your bag doing something else, I mean, go do it, brother. I'm excited to see him. So he's going to be with the Ravens. We'll see if he gets some first team reps in training camp. We'll stay on top of that. All right. And now we've just got a bunch of clips. Pretty quiet going on in the NFL, to my knowledge. Obviously, we talked about UFC 302, which you guys will have already watched, hopefully, by the time you see this program. And now we're just going to get into some clips. We got a lot of Oklahoma drills this week. We've got some fun personalities. Trying to think. I think there's a video about pitching in baseball on there. So let's see what we got. Some of them short, some of them a couple minutes. I think we got a couple more physiological insights from your favorite people in those fields. Okay, next deal. Shit! I love Drewski, bro. That's a funny one. And like I said, it was pretty quick. Shit! Damn it! Okay, next deal.
Yep. There's ball two.
Look at how he skips. How's that not a balk?
Herman Kimbrel joining in here. The umpires are also making their adjustments.
Compared to Brian Harvey of Florida Marlins.
I bet he has a hell of a
ball. Strike three call.
It dips, and here's a slider right here.
A rotation.
You trusted oil change tunip.
He's about damn touching dirt, baby.
The home run allowed him to.
I used to pitch like that in Little League. I used to try. It probably looked horrible.
Got him on the inside.
Pitch number 89. Triple shimmy. Got him.
Focus on a 98 mile an hour fastball. Hey.
I miss Johnny Cueto. I'm kind of upset that the only clip they used with him in Cincinnati was the first one, the intro one. But there are a lot of Cincinnati greats that I've been thinking about recently. Ryan Friel, I've kind of been glazing him the last couple of days on Twitter just because I kind of forgot about him, and then I saw some clips again and I realized like Ryan Friel is my favorite Cincinnati Red to probably ever live. Joey Votto is obviously up there. Brandon Phillips is obviously up there. But Ryan Friel, you've never seen a grittier baseball player. I haven't. That boy was so damn gritty. He got CTE playing baseball, dog. Think about that. Think about the hustle. And rest in peace to a legend. Next deal. We got some John Daly juice. A little bit of shit talking on the golf course. Here we go.
Hey, John.
Yeah, bet.
This hole's only worth $60,000.
I want to wait till it gets up just a little bit more. Get it close. There has been times where I couldn't hit the green from here.
You're running quickly.
No, it's because I see it three balls.
You make that, I'm going to kick your ass. Have you done the new high five? Huh?
I'm all belly, baby. I ain't got no ass.
Sure got a cute butt.
Tell that to my two ex-wives. I got a lot of ass to lean into one, don't I? Well, you can't pull fat. You can pull muscle. I'll go. You know? Huh? What's really sad is you're hitting before I am. You know what?
Dude. John Daly, I've seen clips of him before where someone's talking shit to him and then he just proceeds to just, well, he's getting set up, right? And somebody talks shit. And then he'll talk shit back and then just go right into a swing and just clobber beauty, dude. I wish, that is a skill that I don't know if many other people on the earth other than John Daly have at all. You know what I'm saying? I love that. I wish I could be that, but I'm still shooting in the hundreds. It's just part of it. It's why I like it. It's almost a toxic, me and golf, it's a toxic relationship. You know what I'm saying? It beats my ass and then I just keep crawling back every time. Just crawling back for more. But I love it. I love it because you get that one absolute piss missile that you hit every round, or a great putt. I ended my last round on a really nice 10, 15 foot putt for par, and it went exactly how I read it, and it just dropped right in. My lady was watching me. It was a good little moment that's made me want to go back ever since, and that was 48 hours ago, maybe a little bit longer. Okay, next deal.
Looking for a victim. Got him.
Ball head tackle.
Shit.
My bad, bro. I gotta throw it to you.
No.
Ooh, damn.
Turn off the camera.
You alright?
Hold up. Oh, young vision.
I'm finna flip your damn biscuit.
Wait, what does that mean?
No.
Oh.
Hey, James, you trying to run.
Ball head tackle.
No, I'm throwing the ball.
How many fingers am I holding up?
Algebraic equation.
Hold on, he talking that middle school shit. Take him to the hospital.
Hold up.
Oh, yeah, Wildcat formation. They don't expect the Robin Stupid to run the box.
Who got this shit?
Get up!
Ballhead pick.
Oh, yeah, Matty Whitey making a cameo.
God damn it!
Curse you, bow, motherfucker.
Hey, ballhead tackle.
No.
Bro,
ball head strip.
This touchdown for Ja Rule.
Romo with a fall.
Shut up all that rapping. Shut up all that rapping.
Chill.
Ball head wrestling move. You can't do that.
Another ball head pick.
Come here.
Give me the damn ankle.
I think you need to end.
I'm not done editing this.
Shut your bitch ass up. Yeah. Real Debo. Not be doing that boo.
James Harrison had a mental edge on the competition that I don't think is matched by many others in the history of football. You watch his psychotic workout videos. He's sitting there leg pressing 17 plates on either side, and he's pushing about 34 on a sled. He had a mental edge. That man was a real-life Debo from the movie Friday type shit. I always think about the movie Friday, and there's that it shifts back to this like flashback scene where it goes black and white, and this guy comes up to Debo and he's like, "Hey, bro, like I'm trying to get my bike back that I borrowed from you last week," and he was like, "What bike?" And he was like, "The bike I loaned you." Oh, I didn't know you wanted that back, homie. And he goes, he turns, acts like he's going to go get it, turns around and just bang, sends this guy flying. It's real cinematic. And then I guess it's the guy's dad's in the car pulling up, you know, going to drive him away. And the older guy gets out of the car and Debo goes, "You want some of this, old man?" And he goes, "No." And he just put, I don't know. I love it. I love it. The thing comes to mind with Aaron Donald too. He's like, "You want some of this, old man?" "No." All right, next deal.
Hey. If I hit this in the hole, you guys would be really loving this, wouldn't you?
Oh, look. It's in the hole. That's tight.
Pretty.
Get it.
Wow.
Hey, remember, I'll play that one.
I'm convinced that the best competitors are normally drawn to a sport like golf because it's so unforgiving. It's completely on you. I feel the same way about martial arts. I feel like that attracts the best competitors in the world because it's completely on you. There's 100% accountability in a sport like golf and in a sport like mixed martial arts, because while team sports are great and team sports have cemented a lot of the values that I have held in my life, there's something about an individual sport where all of it's on you. If it's messed up, it's because you messed it up. And for some people, that hurts them. You know, the ego gets involved. But for others, they keep showing up. They keep coming back for more. And MJ, he's got a pretty little swing. I'm not going to lie to you. I wish I could hit a par three like that day in, day out. All right, next deal. We got some Tasmanian devils. My dog Lucy makes that noise when I get her. I get into her. She gets pissed, but it don't hurt her. You know, it's just a little character building. You grab a dog by the haunches, kind of pull on them a little bit, see how they react to it, and kind of give them a nice scratch, but dig in and pause a little bit, and she goes, "Ah!" It's real fun. That's what that reminded me of, I think, at the beginning of the day, end of the day, whatever you want to call it, baby. Next deal.
Welcome to day 16 of training for football every day. Today I'm working on some more offensive and defensive stances. I'm still really struggling on my offensive and defensive stance, so any help would be appreciated. See you tomorrow.
Got to drop the ass down a little bit, come out of that stance with a little bit of boom, gusto, a little bit of boom. But he got out on that pole pretty good, dude. He's got some pounds to pack on if he wants to be an offensive lineman. I'm talking about the boy from the clip I just showed. You know what I mean, Daddy? It's just one of them things. Some things people do well. Some things people got to work on. He's got to get out of that stance, drop his butt, and come out. Bang, bang, bang. Next deal. Good Oklahoma drill. Let's run it. I love that noise. That can make a hit, baby. You got somebody knee touching, man. That's when you know you made a good hit. Man, when I get out, I'm a defensive minded guy. But when I get out, you're like, oh, that's no fun. Good impact. I miss that sometimes, but then there's an intimidating factor about it too in practice where the coach calls Oklahoma drill and you say, "Oh, damn, there's a chance my ass could get exposed right here, boy." But I think as I grew, I realized that you got to just show up to the moment and not worry about getting exposed. Just play your game, baby boy. Play your game. Next deal. Let's see about it. Oh, this guy really mean for real.
Where would I go, y'all? From Chicago, y'all. Where would I go, y'all?
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed sponsored jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
You talk about a retirement dream, boy. Talk about standing up on your porch with a 40 ounce in your right hand, microphone stand sitting right in front of you, boombox playing instrumentals for you to cover 60s and 70s and 80s soul music, baby. You talk about a retirement dream. I don't know of something better to do with my day than what this fella in the clip I just showed was doing. That's fire. That'll damn restore your faith in humanity right there, seeing somebody live their truth, baby. Throw that soul music on, baby, type of thing. Next deal. We got some physiological stuff coming up. So this guy's name's Paul Saladino. You might know him as the animal diet guy. And in the past, I've seen him kind of talk about some stuff where I was like, I don't know if that applies to everybody, but he's very well read, and I think this video is pretty eye-opening. I hope there's no disinformation in it. I can't imagine there would be, but let's dive into it together.
This is how Big Tobacco made junk food insanely addictive. You may not know this, but in the 1980s, tobacco companies Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds purchased General Mills, Kraft, and Nabisco, makers of processed foods including Oreos, Snackwell crackers, Kraft mac and cheese, Teddy Grahams, Oscar Mayer hot dogs. You know the things I'm talking about. By the early 2000s, in the wake of consumer pressure and negative opinions of these tobacco companies, R.J. Reynolds and Philip Morris exited the processed food world, but not before they had left their mark. During the time that they owned these companies, they used the cigarette, the Big Tobacco playbook, to make the foods that Kraft, Nabisco, and General Mills made even more hyperpalatable, even more addictive, and that has had a lasting negative impact on the health of Americans ever since. In a recently published study, researchers from UCSF compared 105 foods that were the best-selling products from brands owned by Philip Morris and R.J. Reynolds between 1988 and 2001, with 587 similar products sold by competing brands not owned by tobacco companies. They found that the foods from the tobacco-owned companies were 80% more likely to contain combinations of carbohydrates and salt, making them hyperpalatable, highly addictive, and incredibly difficult to stop eating compared to the foods from the non-tobacco-owned companies. Basically, the tobacco companies were using their knowledge of how to get people addicted to cigarettes and applying it to junk food to make these even more addictive and to make you and your family unhealthier in the process. So what we find today in 2024 is an incredibly hyperpalatable, incredibly addictive, incredibly nutrient-poor set of ultra-processed foods that are available to most Americans. And we now know that a big part of the reason these ultra-processed foods are so addictive is because they were once owned by Big Tobacco, who used their cigarette playbook against you.
Something wonderful happens when you change to Philip Morris.
Damn, boy. It's concerning, to say the least. Type of food you eat becoming a commercialized endeavor to keep you coming back for more. I don't feel like any healthy food, any food that's serving your body the way it needs to be, has you just ready to overeat mindlessly. You know, it's like when you eat some good organic nutrition dense food, you got your meal, you eat it, and then you're satiated, right? Satiation means you don't want any more for however many hours. But when you get a bag of Frito-Lay chips or Cheez-Its or damn, for me, it's Oreos, dude. I love Oreos. It's like you could eat 20 of them bitches before you even bat an eye and wonder how the hell did I do that. So it's really scary because the compounds in this highly processed food goes into your body and your body's like, well, what do I do with this, brother? And then it just, it puts it away as, I mean, my cellular knowledge, my cellular physiological knowledge is not the best, but I would imagine your body kind of stores those toxins away. And that's what might contribute to making people that eat foods like that feel worse day to day, mentally, physically, spiritually, I would imagine as well. Next deal. We got another Oklahoma.
Bang. Oh, shit.
I wish I could take on a block like that one more time, baby. And that, those types of Oklahoma drills where you got the guards pulling around and you got the linebacker coming up to fill and then you got the ball carrier. You know, you got to split the damn pullers. And when guys are in football, when an offensive lineman or a tight end or a tackle is pulling around to the other side, I'll do it. Yeah, like that. They pick up this momentum that as a linebacker, when you're meeting a pulling lineman, he's going to have a lot of damn momentum pushing forward into that hit on you because they're trying to blow you out of the damn water. It feels good. It's good for film. It's good for the ego. And it helps further the cause on the football field, further the ball on the football field. So I hope coaches around America stick with drills like this. I know it can contribute to some head trauma, but nonetheless, some good juice. What else do we got? We got a packed show for you guys today. Linebacker drill at LSU. I hated these.
Stay down low. Stay down low.
I mean, the coach picks at every little thing, and I get why. But it's not. I hate it. It's like that gator tackle when you're rolling. Yeah. Individual drills in practice, at least in college, it was my least favorite time of the day because it's very fine-tuned. It's very, and back in my college days, I was not as dialed mentally as I needed to be. So a highly intensive, detail-oriented activity like individual drills, like we just showed in LSU's practice video for the linebackers, we were doing stuff like that in Indy every day. And it's the coach's time to kind of nitpick the fundamentals. So for the player, I think individual is not as fun. There might be some guys that really love it because it's a chance for them to kind of hone in and see what little fundamental things could be better. I don't know. I just, back when I was doing them, I was in a place where I didn't really focus on the details as much as I should have. You know what I mean? All right, next deal.
When somebody asks me if I'm having a good day, I just got to ask myself three questions, brother. One, am I alive? I usually am. Two, am I in the land of the free? I usually am, baby.
Land
and
of
three,
the fray.
Do I feel the smiling spirit of George Washington gazing down upon me from the great pearly land of the free in the sky? Brother, there ain't a moment that goes by that I don't feel that. And when I add up that math, makes me realize there are no bad days in the land of the free, baby.
Yeah. I wonder if he's in like Louisiana or Georgia or South Carolina. It's got to be one of those. I was playing that around my lady earlier, and she says, is that guy mentally challenged or is he just Southern? I said, He could be both. That guy's fire, though. I kind of want to be that guy. Talk about a retirement dream, too. Talking about standing out on the dock down there in the swamp, baby. Talking your shit. Wearing the damn sunglasses and the bucket hat with a mustache. You know what I mean? We're rolling on the show today. Let's keep going. All right. So here's some from Huberman. Three lesser known but important aspects of learning and neuroplasticity. Agitation is the gate, not the barrier, through which much of learning-based neuroplasticity occurs. It reflects the action of neuromodulators involved in attention and focus, and that set in motion the necessary neural rewiring to occur. The actual rewiring of neural circuits that allows for learning takes place during sleep, especially in the first night after number one, above. Introducing brief 10 to 30 second pauses when trying to learn new information allows for faster learning. These gap effects reflect the rapid replay of the relevant circuits. They equate to extra repetitions simply by pausing. Gave y'all a little time to digest that based on the content, baby. Okay. I know that neuroplasticity is going on when I try something new and I'm like, I don't like this. This is pissing me off. I'm not good at this. I saw it with my lady. We were out on the golf course and I told her to take a few hacks and she just was getting a little agitated because she had no concept of, in her brain, what it was like to swing a golf club. And so I was watching neuroplasticity play out in real time. And I know that feeling. And a lot of times the ability to push past that initial discomfort and show up the next day and feel more discomfort is exactly what will set you on the road to being great at something new. Next deal, more neuroscience. Doing cognitively demanding tasks for several hours results in accumulation of the neurotransmitter glutamate in the prefrontal cortex, resulting in mental fatigue. So I wonder if there's a supplement you can take that will take care of the glutamate in the prefrontal cortex. If there's certain activities that could possibly optimize the accumulation or lack thereof of that glutamate in the prefrontal cortex. I would imagine good nutrients, good fats, good blood flow could possibly aid in helping prevent a lot of glutamate accumulating in the prefrontal cortex. And it also might just be based on the circadian rhythm as well, right? When the day starts to turn to night, your body registers, hey, it's time for us to start powering down and get some rest. I don't know. I'll have to do more. Actually, we're running long enough anyway. I'll save that article for another day. I sent myself the article around this damn post, but we're already an hour 16 in, and we got more juice to cover before the end of the day here, for the end of the week for the viewers. Next deal. Look at this big beefy. Dude, I remember in high school, we went to Eastern Kentucky, close to Pikeville, played a high school called Belfry, and they had this 5'9", 240-pound white corn-fed brother playing running back. And they would just give him the ball right up the gut. And it was my first game back. I don't know if y'all can see this on my arm. It was my first game back after I had come back from this injury. First game of the year. And I remember I didn't start the game because they didn't know how I was going to do coming back from the injury. So I come in on the second series. I was playing Mike linebacker. And they hand this big corn-fed boy the ball. He was shorter, but stout as a freaking bulldog, low to the ground. They hand him the ball. They had like four Division I offensive linemen. They were just as fast as I was, even though they're 100 pounds heavier. And one of them got their hands on me, started pushing me out. And I reached my hand as this big corn-fed white running back was coming by. And I try to grab his jersey, see if I can pull him down. He just blows right through my bad arm. And then the lineman pancaked me. And there was a crowd of about 10, 15,000 people, and they just erupted as he ripped off 15 or 20 yards. And I remember just looking up and being like, oh, dude, it's going to be a long-ass day. So I saw that. That's what I thought about. It's just these big corn-fed boys. Running the football is fun if you can run it mean and you got the physical means to steamroll a couple of defensive guys. You know what I mean? Just kind of running through them. It's good for the manhood. I don't know what I'm saying, man. I'm talking out of my ass. Next deal.
Lasagna. Are you ready?
Golly.
Are you going to clean up your flour?
Just bad. Just bad. Little piglet. Piglet. This is a long video. I had to cut it short. Lord have mercy. I mean, I grew up with a beagle, and she was a piglet just like in that clip. Just shameless about food. These damn dogs, their noses are so, these beagles' noses are so damn strong that they just cannot resist when food is around. It's like a different, it's like a part of their brain shuts off, these little hound dogs. And I'm not going to lie to you, my German Shorthair Pointer, he's a piglet as well, but he don't have the audacity to freaking full send on some food when I'm sitting right there. Them beagles are stubborn, they are bullheaded, and they just don't care a lot of the time. They are just, but they're so sweet, and they got so many redeeming qualities about their personality. I love them, as bad as they are. I mean, those dogs were bad. So anyway, this is the last clip of the week. And I thought we'd just get some feel-good vibes going, heading out into the week here on In the Jar, episode 21. It's your boy, Bryson, who has, Bryson DeChambeau, the golfer, has grown on me tremendously. I saw a clip of him throwing his ball or his glove to a little kid that was standing by as he was walking by in a tournament going hole to hole. And a grown man intercepted the ball from the young kid, and Bryson stopped in his tracks and took his club and pointed at the guy that took it and was like, no, like, you come back. You give it to who I was throwing it to. And it was a really cool moment because I kind of thought Bryson was a boner for all this time, and a lot of golfers, they are kind of egotistical, but I think Bryson's pretty cool. And I don't know if this is a LIV tournament or what, but it's just freaking.
Now on the tee, representing the United States of America, Bryson DeChambeau.
Striker.
340 to the front edge of the green. Giving it a go.
Why wouldn't he, Bryce?
This match is Dave McAtee. Good luck,
and that one is on the green. Much to the delight of the thousands around it.
Lord.
Good looking putt by DeChambeau.
Wow.
Why can't I play golf like that? I know the answer. This is In the Jar, episode 21, with your boy Dupe. If we hit you in the chest this week, hit that like button. God forbid y'all subscribe. Let's get that going. We really appreciate y'all tuning in. Until next week, be a friend, tell a friend. See you, fellas.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.